Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Still no deal for a baseball season? Maybe yesterday's optimism was ill-advised. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be along with you, and today we will talk about a variety of topics, but we might as well begin with Major League Baseball. Now, the Players Association delivered a counterproposal to the owners, which is no surprise. However, this counterproposal includes a 70-game season and an expanded playoffs, not only this year, but also in 2021. Now, in a statement, the proposal, Tony Clark, who's the executive director of the Major League Baseball Players Association, said, quote, "We believe this offer represents the basis for an agreement on the resumption of play." Now, according to ESPN's Jeff Passan, who again has been one of my favorite follows throughout this whole process, here's what the Players Association is asking for. A 70-game season that will begin on July 19th, so 1 month from tomorrow, and it will go through September 30th. Full prorated pay, spring training to begin in 8 days, an expanded playoff pool that'll take it to 16 teams both this season and next, a minimal pool for playoff shares in 2020 based on rounds played, so $50 million if the full playoffs are staged, a 50-50 split of incremental TV revenues for any additional postseason games, salary advance forgiveness for all players in tier 1 through 3, and then opt-outs as well, which is full service and salary for players who are high-risk and those who live with high-risk individuals. There's a grip of other things that the players want in this proposal, but following a 4-hour negotiation in Phoenix between both Clark and Manfred on Tuesday, it appeared that we were going to get a season. In fact, yesterday we were talking about the idea that this could be a done deal by Friday. Now, if a deal is not made and the league does not, the owners rather, do not go along with the Players Association's demands, the league has the ability to implement a season of its desired length, which would be around 50 games, because that's what the owners keep calling for. And then the union would have an opportunity to file a grievance. Now, in the deal that Major League Baseball proposed, players were paid their full prorated salaries, which was a total of $1.5 billion, or about 37% of their full season salaries. Players aren't having that. This is just a frustrating situation if you're a fan of baseball. And if you're not a fan of baseball, I guarantee you are sick and tired of hearing about it. In fact, I promise that you're sick and tired of hearing about it if you're not a fan of baseball. You got to be sitting there rolling your eyes. Every other sport can get off and rolling. Baseball has a sticking point because baseball can't get out of its own way. That's the way it's always been. So that's where we sit as far as a Major League Baseball season. Let's transition over to the NFL. And the situation with Jamal Adams and the New York Jets, apparently it is far from over because the Jets and Adams have gotten nowhere on contract negotiations. And as of today, Adams has informed the team that he wants to be traded. Now, according to Adam Schefter, Adams wants to go to a handful of teams. The Ravens, the Cowboys, the Texans, the Chiefs, the Eagles, the 49ers, or the Seahawks. Those are the teams that Adam wants to go to, which I always find real interesting. You got a player that's unhappy with his situation in New York, contract-wise. He's unhappy with his situation. And so he demands a trade, and then he tells the team where he wants to go. I understand that in today's world, a lot of people, a lot of fans will always side with the players. You can't side with Jamal Adams here. This guy is being unreasonable, to say the least. Now, the trade demand comes after he hinted today on social media that he may want to be traded. because that's where everybody goes when they want to voice their frustration, right? Social media. Jamal Adams had a long rant, and then he ended it with saying, maybe it's time to move on. Now, again, going back to Adams' contract demands or his trade demand, he has no leverage because the Jets have him signed through 2021. And then again, unlike any other sport in the NFL, you have this thing called a franchise tag. Now, according to multiple outlets, the Jets have no intentions of trading him. Now, what he could do is try to force their hand, which he may very easily do. But still, when you look at the rookie class that Adams come out of, I mean, it was loaded. Christian McCaffrey, highest paid running back. Myles Garrett, he's going to get record-breaking money. Patrick Mahomes, set to get a record-breaking deal as well. So I guess I understand where Adams is coming from. But the Jets don't want to deal with his contract right now. And in the same sense, they don't want to trade him. Adams wants to be the highest paid safety, meaning that it would cost roughly $14.6 million per season, because that's what the Bears are paying Eddie Jackson. And also, there are reports saying that Adams wants to be the highest paid player on the Jets, which means he will easily eclipse that $14.6 million per season, because C.J. Mosley, who signed last year, signed a $17 million deal. So again, you can side with players all you would like. The fact of the matter is here, Adams is being completely illogical. Let's move away from the Jets. We'll transition over to the NFC champion San Francisco 49ers. Some bad news today. Deebo Samuel breaks his foot in a throwing session, and he's going to have surgery. Now, the fracture is a break between the base and the middle part of the foot, and it will require surgery again, which is scheduled for later today. Now, according to the 49ers, the timetable is not yet known, but it is estimated that it could be around 3 months, which would make him questionable for week one. This is huge for the 49ers, and the reason being, I believe San Francisco already is going to take a step back offensively. You have the right coach in place to maneuver a team through a lack of weapons on the outside, but without Samuel, for one, there's no free agent out there that can replicate what this guy can do. And you may still have George Kittle, but don't forget, you lost Emmanuel Sanders as well. It's a team that can run the football, but this affects Jimmy Garoppolo, and this affects the San Francisco 49er offense in a massive, massive way. And that's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front right now. Today, we're going to talk all national sports. One topic in particular, NFL football. It is the middle of June. We haven't had many fantasy conversations. Here in about a month, you're going to be gearing up for your fantasy drafts, I believe. Typically early August, right? Let's bring in Joe Bartel. He's going to join us, Joe Bartel of RotoWire. He's a fantasy football expert. I love RotoWire. Love the fact that RotoWire and Drive Time Sports have been able to team up for some different segments over the last little while, because it's a product that I highly, highly recommend. And so I'm looking forward to getting Joe Bartel on the show. Also, we are going to talk some boxing. In fact, we get boxing tonight on ESPN. Gabe Flores will go up against Josek Ruiz. It's just sports. That's what it is, right? Even if you don't know who the two guys are, it's sports. This actually has a pretty interesting card all the way around. But outside of tonight's Gabe Flores, Josek Ruiz fight, there's some other conversations brewing in the world of boxing, such as Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua. How about the return of Manny Pacquiao? We're just waiting on a final opponent. It could be Terrence Crawford, which may in fact be the biggest fight that could be made in boxing right now. We'll talk boxing next segment. We have fantasy football talk coming up, and we'll give you the local sports recap. That's all straight ahead right here on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Now, this local Castle Country sports update with Jordan Buscarini from KOAL.
Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. The shortest draft in Major League Baseball history wrapped up after only five rounds last Thursday, 1 week ago today. And since then, just over 80 undrafted free agents have signed big league deals, including Jared Lesser, who's a former pitcher from Carbon High School, USU Eastern, and now BYU. He agreed to terms early Sunday morning with the New York Yankees. Again, Lesser, a Carbon County native, also had stops at Southern Utah University. His journey to signing a major league contract has been unorthodox, to say the least. He was a guest earlier this week on Drive Time Sports, and he talked about a wild ride, which has led to signing a major league deal.
It's been a wild ride. From where I was at 5 years ago to compare to most other guys who signed MLB contracts were 5 years ago, I mean, it's completely opposite ends of the spectrum, I think.
A three-sport athlete at Carbon High School, Lesser excelled on the baseball diamond. He was named to the 3A All-Star team during his senior campaign at Carbon, and he was also part of the Helper American Legion back-to-back state championship squads. He also delivered a solid senior season at quarterback on the football field as he led the team in both passing and rushing yards as the Dinos recorded one of their most successful seasons. Following high school, Lesser went to Southern Utah University. After gray-shirting one football season, he returned home and received an opportunity to play baseball at USU Eastern. But before that could begin, he was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease.
Yeah, so come back from SUU, started playing at USU Eastern baseball. Scott Madsen, luckily enough, to let me come and try out, made the roster for the fall team, and got diagnosed with autoimmune disease, rheumatoid arthritis. Didn't really even throw that much my freshman year at USU Eastern. I think it was like 16, 12 innings, something like that. Mostly at the end of the year once I got, you know, my health under control and everything.
2018 proved to be a pivotal year for Lesser's baseball career at USU Eastern. He pitched a team-high 66 innings and earned a team-best 5 wins and recorded 62 strikeouts. That standout season ended with SWAC All-Conference honors. He then traveled to BYU, where he would pitch one season in 2019 and then a condensed season in 2020. Lesser at that point had done enough to spark interest from Major League scouts. However, with uncertainty surrounding the 2020 baseball season, the league cut its amateur draft from 40 rounds to 5. And that plan also allowed teams to offer signing bonuses of no more than $20,000 to undrafted free agents. Lesser was aware of interest from the Yankees heading into the draft, and following the draft on Thursday, he signed as early as he possibly could on Sunday when teams were permitted to sign undrafted free agents.
You know, you hear baseball, I mean, the first thing that comes to people's heads is, you know, like Yankees. It just goes along with, I mean, celebrities, you see everybody wearing the Yankees hats and everything. So it's crazy, you know, enough that, you know, I actually got to sign a free agent contract and, you know, I get to chase my dreams of playing professional baseball. But for it to be the most winningest baseball team in history, you know, the 27-time World Series winning New York Yankees, it's mind-blowing.
At this time, Major League Baseball operations are at a standstill. When the training and playing dates are set, Lesser will report to the Yankees team facility in Tampa Bay. You can read in-depth about Lesser's journey to signing a Major League contract right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
That said, of course, means it's time for boxing here on Drive Time Sports. Haven't had one of these conversations in a couple of months. We haven't had a lot of boxing over the last few months, like every other sport, but I'll tell you, the speculation and the talk surrounding a couple of potential major fights, it sure is a lot of fun. In fact, just last week, the idea of getting a Joshua Fury, a duo, no less, two fights, that talk kind of sparked up boxing and it put it back in the mainstream, to say the least. Joining us right now to have that conversation and to talk about the welterweight division, we have our boxing analyst and insider, Tony Whitby. Tony, it's always a pleasure to speak with you and get you on the show to talk boxing. Thank you again for the time today.
Hey, it's always great to be here, JB.
Let's start with the heavyweight division. Why not? That's kind of the segue that we moved into this segment with. When you look at the idea of three legitimate heavyweights, it's been a while since we've had this, and you and I have had this conversation now for a couple of years. At one particular time in my mind, the biggest fight to be made in the world was Wilder-Joshua. At that particular time, we didn't know what Tyson Fury had left in the tank. We didn't know what he looked like physically. We didn't know what his mental state was like at that particular time. Since we watched him completely wipe the floor with Wilder. Well, we had the split or the draw that could have went either way, and then of course we have just the brutal knockout. It seems like the biggest fight to be made is Joshua and Fury. And Tony, as long as you and I have had these conversations, I was kind of the mindset that Joshua was the superior fighter, especially in comparison to Wilder. I'm very amped up for the idea of seeing a Fury versus Joshua fight, and to get two with that, a two-fight agreement. I'm very excited with where the heavyweight division is moving right now.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, you know, these are the type of fights that boxing needs. These are the tent poles when it comes to, you know, the boxing game and how the business works. So it's nice to hear these things come out and be announced. It's also nice to know that, hey, you know, the winner in the first fight gets a 60-40 split for the second fight. It's kind of a cool extra incentive to ensure that you actually really, you know, fight your butt off in the first one. I really think, in my opinion, that these fights need to happen, and it's good for the sport. You know, Wilder's obviously taking some side money to do so, and that's very intricate to think about because a lot of people think Wilder should not take his, you know, immediate rematch with Fury, just given how he lost that fight. So it is sound business move on his part to, you know, take that side money to allow this type of fight to happen. It's not even a question. This would be the biggest fight, not just in our country or in England, but the entire world. This is what everyone would be viewing and watching. And it would be exciting stylistically, the matchup of Joshua and Fury. So, I'm really excited about it.
Definitely. There's no question about it. And as you mentioned, as far as Wilder is concerned, look, I get it. He's exciting. Every second of a Wilder fight, you're on the edge of your seat because he can end it just like that. One of the things that I love about boxing, 9 out of 10 times, maybe we could take that even further and say 99 out of 100 times, a boxer is going to beat a puncher. And that's what we get when we watch Fury and Wilder. I know that the first go around, it was entertaining. That was Fury's fight until Wilder had a 10-8 round right at the end. Somehow Fury gets up, but then it looked like the adjustment period, right? When we get round two, when we get the second go around, and he was completely outmatched. So when I look at Joshua and I look at Fury, to me, Tony, I mean, this is a prime heavyweight bout where I believe we could get a trilogy out of it, and it could be the first heavyweight trilogy that we have had in quite some time. I mean, if you go back and you think, what was the last time we had an entertaining trilogy? Was it Holyfield-Bo? That may have been the last heavyweight trilogy that was truly engaging and entertaining.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. As far as, you know, rubber matches are concerned in the heavyweight division, I think you're right, because, you know, anytime the Klitschkos take a loss, they avenged them easily, and they were never trilogies. They never needed to happen. So, yeah, you're probably right on that. I'd have to, you know, put on my research goggles real quick to actually think about that a little bit more. But, yeah, I think you're right on that. When it comes to these two brutes, you know, I have to feel, in my opinion, that Fury kind of has the edge, the momentum, more so than Joshua. Like you said at the beginning, man, we all kind of thought at one point Joshua was the guy, is the guy.
Yep.
But some shine came off the armor a little bit because of the idea of Andy Ruiz was able to do what he was able to do. Now the question is, could Tyson Fury do something like that? Some would say easily they think he could. And some people think, no, they're not built the same way. The driving force, the momentum, is not that same design. So, no, Joshua would still have a hands up. And you could argue, look what Joshua did in the second fight against Ruiz. But, you know, it is that, you know, does A beat B, but A loses the C. So it's that same type of scenario. And this is why we talk about these fights, because they're fun to just, you know, kind of really talk about it from a mental hyperbole standpoint.
Again, our guest right now is Tony Whitby, as we're talking boxing right now, which is making its return to the mainstream sports scene. Tony, speaking of hyperbole and some of the fights that could be made, let's move to the welterweight division. It has been the division in boxing now for quite some time. When you look at it front to back, the welterweight division has been the most entertaining. It's produced the most dollars, that's for sure, as far as boxing is concerned. And so now we have the idea of watching Manny Pacquiao again, hopefully relatively soon, because it's always good for boxing. boxing. Regardless if Pacquiao was past his prime, it's always good for boxing when you have a legend that can still bring in revenue, and that's what Pacquiao can do. Now the question is, who does he step in the ring with next? You and I had a text conversation earlier in the week, and the idea that Terrence Crawford could be next for Pacquiao, and I'm telling you, if you love action, that's the fight that you want. I don't think it goes the distance. I don't think it goes 12 rounds, but I promise there's going to be a lot of offense in that fight, and that could be a great thing for boxing, considering Pacquiao was towards the end of his career, and in my mind, right now, Terrence Crawford may be the best fighter with the least amount of marketability behind his name. Casual fans still are unaware of just how spectacular this guy is. Sign me up for this fight. I really want it to happen.
Yeah, I do. I do too, without a doubt. I mean, I would say first too, to credit you, you know, as much as I keep my pulse on the boxing beat itself, you were the first one to really say to me, "Hey, I think this might be popping off," and I'm like, "What?" So looking at it and then really starting to kind of digest it and kind of review it. Let's not only forget, you know, Manny Pacquiao being a legend and, you know, marketability and so on, but entertaining. Entertainment in the ring, he still brings that to the table, even at this age. You're not just trying to watch him just because he is the legend and he has that nuance. He actually is an entertaining fighter still to this day to watch. And that's where that marketability continues to kind of stick on to him and have that stigma in a positive way. With Terrence Crawford being the young lion, you know, the live dog, so on, and probably in most people's eyes, should be considered a heavy favorite in this. And like you said, you think Terrence Crawford would, you know, outright destroy and beat Pacquiao. In my eyes, I think this fight is a heck of a lot closer than many people believe. Now, again, this could just be me idolizing Pacquiao or me just talking and seeing him for the last 25 years. But I do think there's certain nuances and angles of this fight that still lead me to believe that not only is Pacquiao a live dog, but actually could potentially still win a fight like this. So I find this fight extremely intriguing. And outside of a Fury and Anthony Joshua fight, this should be the next biggest fight out there.
Yeah, look, I'm not saying that Crawford would destroy Pacquiao because I don't like Pacquiao. I appreciate everything that Manny Pacquiao has done for the sport. This guy is a Hall of Famer, one of the best of his generation, and I do like Manny Pacquiao. I really do. At this stage in his career, I don't necessarily think that it's a great move for Pacquiao. I think it's a great move for Crawford. And the reason I say it's a great move for Crawford is because, Tony, we know this in boxing, and it's the only sport that we can say that there's actual agendas that float around. Maybe you can use it with the UFC. You know, look at a guy like Conor McGregor, who's never had a title defense. Dana White has protected Conor McGregor. But when you have someone that doesn't pack, and again, when I say that Crawford doesn't pack the marketability, his fights aren't doing, he's not getting $30 million guaranteed to step in the boxing ring. But I think he has the talent to do that, right? So you need someone with the marketability to introduce you to a new fan base. And that's why Terrence Crawford needs this fight. I mean, when you take a look at his resume, you brought it up to me off the air. It's not, he has fought nobody close to Pacquiao as far as resumes are concerned. I mean, he's got a win over Amir Khan. He beat Jeff Horn, who did beat Manny Pacquiao in a highly disputed decision. But really, not a lot of these names stand out to you. This is exactly what Terrence Crawford needs. If Manny Pacquiao wants this fight, Bob Arum and Terrence Crawford better be first in line signing up for it, because this is the fight that'll introduce Crawford and potentially elevate him to a superstar status, because he's not there yet. He's not a superstar status guy. He's not.
100%. And this is not me and JB trying to do our best version of Stephen A. Smith versus Skip Bayless or anything like that. But that being said, I would also counter back and say that there's no fight that Terrence Crawford's been, that it had the remotely, like, remote close entertainment, just shock value, giant, big platform fight that a Manny Pacquiao fight would cause. And that's going to mess with somebody like Terrence Crawford, who's used to fighting in ballrooms or, you know, 10,000 people in Omaha, but not 30,000 in Las Vegas or whatever the case may be. This would be, you know, a highly, you know, huge event, and I just don't think he's not been in anything remotely close to that, and I think that shock value could get to him. Now, you could also counter back that Crawford stylistically is bad for Pacquiao, but you could also argue Crawford's never seen anything like Pacquiao because they just don't make fighters like Pacquiao. He is one of a kind in that regards, and we won't know what that looks like. And that's what makes this fight really entertaining. I don't think this fight does have the ability or the kind of the essence of like a Hagler-Hearns, you know, 3 minutes of just craziness. But it could go longer than most people think, and I do think that Pacquiao would be a live dog. And just depending on how those camps go, I can't make an initial decision, but I just don't think it's going to be Crawford full throttle the entire time.
Okay, so if you're a promoter and you have the possibility, you're a fan, but you have the possibility of putting a fight together as a promoter, what do you want to see more, Porter Crawford or Pacquiao Crawford?
Well, here's if I'm Bob Arum, let's be honest. I mean, these are both Bob Arum fighters. You really have to sit down and go and ask Pacquiao, how many more fights do you have left in you that you want to continue? And at the same time, what level are you wanting to continue at? You know, let's not forget, Pacquiao took out Keith Thurman, where many people thought he was in the top, let's just say, three or four, maybe one or two, but this is in the top four welterweight division wins, and Pacquiao beat him. If he's wanting to go and stay at that higher upper echelon, this is that fight for him, and obviously Arum shouldn't have a problem with that, knowing that if Pacquiao either has his foot out the door to where he can pass the baton to Crawford, or, you know, keep it within, you know, intermingle within the promotion company itself and say, look, even if you take this loss, you can still, here's some other fights that you can still take afterwards. It's kind of that brainchild. Or if it's that entertaining, maybe you do it again. It won't be the first time Pacquiao's fought somebody for a second, let alone third or fourth time. So, you know, that's really what we have to look at. And how serious is Crawford? We know right now Crawford's not wanting to fight for small money. He's not going to get back in the ring unless he's getting big money. He's already went on record and saying, look, you know, I'm not taking a pay cut just because of what's going on, you know, in society with COVID. I still want big fights. So if that's the case, you're going to need to fight a big name. That's Manny Pacquiao. So that's kind of where this is kind of coming from. Well, if you're going to fight the big names, there's going to be that danger and entanglement into it as well. And, I hope it happens. I'm hoping November 5th. You know what I mean? Something like that. Just something in November just pops off because it'd be really exciting to see.
Tony Whitby, again, our boxing insider here on Drive Time Sports. There's a lot of great other things happening right now in the sport of boxing as well. If you have a craving for sports in general, Tony, boxing is now an appetizer. We're back in the ring.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I would encourage everyone, even tonight on ESPN, you'll be able to watch fights. And what's really nice about this is that you'll be able to watch fights, fighters you've never seen before, but also young fighters that are fighting four-round, six-round fights. So you're not watching, you know, some names for 12-1 fights. And these are young kids that are really trying to showcase what's going on. These guys are hungry. This is what people need to understand when it comes to boxing. If they're not fighting, they're not getting paid. So these guys right now that are in the ring, they want to be showcased, and they're doing everything they can. The last three fights that have been on ESPN, the last three nights of fights, I should say, every Tuesday and Thursday, have been very entertaining fight cards because these guys haven't fought for 6-8 months, you know what I mean, you're just doing with what's been going on. So I highly recommend and highly encourage, if anyone has any inkling to boxing, check those shows out, and then let JB know if they were entertaining or not. I'd be interested to hear what people say.
Definitely, definitely. Tony Whitby, again, our guest. Tony, it's always a pleasure to get you on to talk boxing. I appreciate the time, and I know we'll do it again real soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. Again, we are live from the Auto Farm Studios right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios, right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. They would call it the dog days of summer. I know it's been kind of the dog days of the last 3 months, going to the end of spring and the way things have kind of gone down. But still, we're gearing up for football. And anytime you see the announcement the NFL starts pushing Hard Knocks, you know we're getting close, middle of June already. And of course, fantasy football is a very big deal. Joining us right now over the phone, once again, we have Joe Bartel. He's a fantasy expert with RotoWire, one of the top websites in the game, one of the top companies in the game when it comes to fantasy sports. Joe, it's a pleasure to get you back on the show today. Thank you so much for the time.
Yeah, I'm happy to be on. Happy to talk some more fantasy football. It's always great when we can have a little bit of sports in our lives, especially going on right now.
Yeah, you and I, we talked before the draft, we talked after the draft, so we have had some pretty in-depth conversations about rookies as far as fantasy football is concerned. But Joe, I'm going to throw this one out there for you right now. You obviously know your fantasy football inside and out. At RotoWire, it doesn't matter what sport we're talking about, you guys have the experts. And as we gear up for fantasy drafts, how does Joe Bartel sit and dissect busts in the game of fantasy football? How do you go about doing that?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. So I think that there's two ways of approach in the fantasy community. There's really the analytical people that dive into the numbers, and I'm talking like average depth of target per throw or routes run past 20 yards, like really finite diving into the numbers and trying to figure out what works. And then there's people that watch the tape and then transpose that with what they anticipate is going to happen next season. I do a little bit of both, and when I'm looking at busts in particular, I'm trying to plan ahead for what I think could occur. So everyone's projecting for the best-case scenario. What happens when that best-case scenario doesn't occur? Very rarely are we able to identify a player. Maybe Chris Godwin is a good example of what doesn't happen very often last year. Everybody in the fantasy community thought Chris Godwin was going to explode, and of course he did. But very few times does that really happen or occur. So let's give an example of last year. I was all in Lamar Jackson among many players, but Lamar Jackson was kind of my big idea. We were projecting the best-case scenario for Lamar Jackson, or very few were in the fantasy world. We knew he could do as a runner, but there was very few that were thinking what he could do as a passer as well. And then if all that works out, what's the fantasy total? I was saying best-case scenario where his value was going, and looking at the film, this is a guy that could be something special. Of course, he had the MVP season last year. It's not meant to be a brag, but it's how we're kind of working off the situation. So I do that for the risers. The opposite then applies for the bust opportunities. And oftentimes I try to project, not injuries, you never want to assume somebody's going to get hurt, but what could happen if there is an injury or where that would mean for their average draft position or ADP. And that's where I kind of dive into the bust more. So a lot of it's based off of watching the tape from last year, combining some of the statistics we've seen, and then going off of what other people have projected. Again, there is either the numbers guys or the tape guys, and there really isn't many of them in between in the fantasy community, and then basing off of that.
Okay, you just mentioned injuries, and it's something that you never can predict or you don't want to predict, although track records, sometimes they can do the math. However, we did have an injury come through earlier today, and this is definitely going to affect fantasy draft boards, no question. The 49ers are going to be without Deebo Samuel for at least 3 to 4 months as he has suffered a broken foot. So when something like this comes down the pipe, not only does it affect Samuel, but this could affect the San Francisco 49er offensive players in general.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just a broken foot, but it's like that Jones fractured one. We saw Julio Jones suffer from that, I think it was 2 years ago, and basically rendered him obsolete for 8 or 9 weeks towards the end of the season. Deebo Samuel is not the same type of player as Julio Jones. In fact, I think this hurts him a little bit more than maybe a traditional bigger player who can go up and get the catch. Like, Samuel's whole game is based off of being able to cut, being agile, being able to make moves after the catch and also getting open. And this is going to be a tough one. Now, it's different than even 5 or 10 years ago, and certainly NBA guys who have this type of injury are even more susceptible. It's not as dire or straits type of deal, but 3 or 4 months at minimum where he's not practicing in an environment right now where it's tough to do medical stuff. And I say medical stuff because I don't really know what the NFL does in comparison to real life, but you have to imagine it's going to be a little bit harder to rehab, a little bit harder, or make sure their precautions are followed very thoroughly when it comes to the surgery and everything else involved with the rehabilitation of that injury. So there's no guarantee. Like, if any there was time to say, hey, it's going to be longer than 3 or 4 months, it would be during a pandemic. And I think that's where I get a little bit concerned with preseason injuries right now, or offseason injuries, whatever term you want to use. That 49ers offense is going to struggle more. They lost Emmanuel Sanders already, and he was a midseason addition that helped, I think, at times, but really I thought his value was a bit over-exaggerated with how big of an emphasis they place on the run. But if there is George Kittle, and there is only George Kittle for the passing attack, that becomes a problem for me. And I have to really see what they can do with Brandon Ayuk, who they drafted in the first round with their last first-round pick, what he can do as a pass catcher. But it's tough. Like, Deebo was the guy, other than George Kittle, and they have lost that guy for, you have to imagine, at least in the early portion of the season, they're going to have a harder division with the Cardinals now kind of improving. We still know what the Rams are going to be, but the Seahawks are always a capable opponent as well. And I just get concerned seeing an offense be so dominant last year, run-focused dominant, but very dominant, and then the NFL being able to adjust. We saw with the Rams the season before that, too, where everyone kind of caught on after the Super Bowl and how the Patriots were able to handle that. Not saying that a Shanahan-led rushing offense can ever be figured out, like we saw it even with the Broncos and his dad, where they get 1,000-yard rushers every single year. But the NFL seems to be able to adjust to that stuff, and that's where my concern is. So George Kittle still makes complete sense as the focal point, and even might get higher with his value, especially if he's getting maybe 10 to 15 targets per game as opposed to maybe 8 to 10 with Samuel out. But after that, I'm not sure where you can really project going forward. Jimmy Garoppolo, I think, gets hurt the most out of this, and maybe you could assume Ayuk can do some things, but I'm less uncertain about that.
Again, Joe Bartel right now of RotoWire, our guest, as we have some early summer fantasy football talk going down. Now, Joe, I asked you how you determine busts, how you guys go about that at RotoWire. Now let's talk about sleepers. Sleepers are always fun, right? Because if you were one of the owners that was lucky enough to snag Raheem Mostert last year, you probably put yourself in a pretty good position late. I mean, you go back and you look at some of the fantasy sleepers that we've seen over the past little while. I mean, Derrick Henry, I think you could probably consider him I don't know if you call him a sleeper, but definitely surprising as far as what he was able to do in 2019. You go back, you look at Christian McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara in 2018, Devontae Adams in 2017. There's a little luck that goes into fantasy football. So when you're trying to determine sleepers, what route do you go?
Yeah, and we talked about Lamar earlier. I think another example, even from past seasons or last year in particular, is Austin Eckler, right? With Melvin Gordon out missing four games due to his holdout. I think it was three, but he really didn't play the fourth game at the Dolphins. You got to see him emerge as the guy. So when I'm looking at sleepers, opportunity is the biggest thing for me. However, if everybody else has identified that opportunity already, then it's not a sleeper. So I think we want to make sure we really clarify that. Again, everybody thought Chris Godwin was going to be a fantastic option fantasy-wise to the point there he's pushed up to the fourth or fifth round in most standard drafts. And this is a guy that hadn't really done anything in the NFL up until the point last season. Well, ended up working out. We saw the opportunity work with the Buccaneers office and Jameis Winston passing it. So who has opportunities this year to be able to do some things that are special? I think a guy like Tyler Boyd might be a bit of a sleeper. His ADP is not really pushed up that high, but with Joe Burrow being a more effective quarterback, we have to imagine the Bengals' defense is still going to struggle where they have to pass, and they have a lot of matchups where you at least project early in the season they're going to struggle. There's going to be a lot of opportunities for that Bengals offense to do things. Joe Mixon is a favorite for many people because the running back position overall is kind of, it's not as deep as it was in past seasons, but I think the passing game needs to be more of the focus as opposed to the rushing game. So Tyler Boyd is an option. John Ross, too, in that conversation, certainly is someone that could provide value for you, but it's based on where people are drafting him. And I would suggest either going on RotoWire itself, if we have an average draft position or ADP spot to compare across multiple leagues. So if you are drafting on ESPN earlier, Yahoo, when it comes to August, you can look and see where those ADPs are. And when I'm projecting and planning how I want my draft to unfold, I always look at the ADP of the certain site that I'm using ahead of time. Maybe I can find some value from that. So that's kind of where the sleep, I mean, everyone knows sleepers really more so than busts when it comes to draft season in late July and early August. Like, everyone's got their own guys that they really like. But to me, I'm able to base it off a little bit more the average draft position of the players themselves, and I have to make sure I look in the specific sites and kind of project and plan accordingly from where my draft spot is.
Yeah, and when you talk about receivers, and again, I agree with you on Tyler Boyd. I don't know if you can consider a 1,000-yard receiver ever a sleeper, but when you mention the idea of opportunity, really, when you look at Dallas, Michael Gallup has got to be a guy, and I don't know where you have his ADP right now, but considering that Randall Cobb is now gone, Jason Witten is now gone, those are two guys that combined for like close to 180 targets, if I'm not mistaken, last year, really models, and I guess just looking statistically, this should bode well for Michael Gallup this year.
Yeah, Michael Gallup is going around the 8th or 9th round, maybe the 7th round in NFFC, and that when I say the NFFC drafts, they're kind of the premier leagues, because they're high stakes. So there's you could do those ESPN ADPs or Yahoo ADPs, and they sometimes get changed around because people will just do phony custom drafts or just trying a different strategy because there isn't any ramifications for doing it incorrectly, right? Like there's no skin in the game. The NFFC has a lot of money on the line for these competitions, so we generally in the industry tend to base it around those type of things. So the NFFC is going around the 7th, 8th, 9th round. That, to me, is a little bit high for a couple of different reasons. The first one, and we talked about this, I think, the last broadcast or so, CeeDee Lamb going to the Cowboys makes me very, very anxious. You look at the targets that are available. You talk about Cobb leaving. You talk about Jason Witten leaving. Witten wasn't doing a lot as a pass catcher. He was more of a blocker and also just a guy that was there 3 to 4 yards down the field. But even if Witten is getting 80-90 targets in a season, you have to look at where those targets are happening. Again, 3 to 4 yards out is great. Dak Prescott can look his way all the time. Fantastic. But you can't imagine that Michael Gallup is going to assume those targets because he isn't running 3 to 4 yard routes. That probably benefits more CeeDee Lamb. And the same goes for Randall Cobb, too. I think Ezekiel Elliott gets hurt the most by the addition of CeeDee Lamb. But after that, it's probably Gallup, especially because the Cowboys already invested in Amari Cooper this past offseason, and Gallup's contract is running out, too. Now, they might try to feed Michael Gallup the ball a little bit more so he gets a higher potential signing from somebody else, or they could flip him if, for whatever the reason, the NFC East becomes out of reach or unattainable to them by week 8 of the trade deadline or whatever else. But I just have a hard time believing that. And the Mike McCarthy offense, too, tends to feature those guys who can do a lot after the catch. And I think CeeDee Lamb, again, is a perfect example. Not where Lamb is a guy that I'm going to go ahead and target, but I do think it makes me concerned about what Michael Gallup could do, and maybe to some extent Amari Cooper as well, because there's so many mouths to feed in that offense.
Joe, as far as quarterbacks are concerned, and maybe this isn't the right model, I don't know, but I always wait on quarterbacks when it comes to fantasy. Dynasty league's obviously a little bit different, but when you really break it down and you look at a 12-team league, I've never been able to really find value in drafting a mid-tier quarterback, someone that's going to be around 8, 9, or 10, when you can grab value at a receiver or a tight end or a running back position, because to me, there's never been that great of a drop-off from, say, Matt Ryan to, I don't know, Jared Goff or a Ben Roethlisberger if he's healthy. I'm curious how you would recommend approaching the quarterback spot, and who are some of those guys that you like around that 9th, 10th, 11th, or 12th quarterback spot?
Yeah, it's different each year, but I'll give you an example. Lamar Jackson was the 12th overall quarterback selected in most NFFC drafts last season. He obviously was fantastic and somebody I targeted frequently. Patrick Mahomes, the year before that, was also the 10th to 12th quarterback selected and somebody I also targeted a lot, too. This year, it's a little bit different, though. You look at the guys that are going around that 9th, 10th, 11th quarterback range, and we're talking about Josh Allen, Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz, a lot of younger guys who can give you a little bit from with their legs but also throwing the ball, too, but some major question marks. And I don't know if I have those same question marks with Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes in the year past. Maybe I was biased and I just fell in love with the prospect profile for both those guys, which is true. I mean, it's hard not to like either one of those given how great they can be at the quarterback position. But I just feel like there's some serious limitations with relying on a Josh Allen or a Daniel Jones just based on the turnovers alone. Now, I will say, if your league is a 6 points per passing touchdown league, most are not. ESPN, Yahoo, your standard ones, are just 4 points per passing touchdown. However, in the higher stakes leagues, or if leagues want to put more emphasis on the quarterback position, you generally bump it up by 2 points per touchdown. If that's the case, guys like Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, who are going right now in the second or third round in most standard leagues, make complete sense to me. I agree with you. I don't normally invest highly in the quarterback position because I can find value late. But if you are in a 6 points per passing or per passing touchdown league, I like going for that value because you're getting guaranteed value at really a fraction of the cost compared to the other positions out there. Now, to your other question, though, values the quarterback spot. I think again, the quarterback is always deep. It feels like in 12-team leagues, you could easily get a starting quarterback as long as you want to wait for it. In our RotoWire mock draft, which we do one for standard league and one for PPR league. I participated in the standard one, and I waited till my very last selection in I think it was a 14-round thing with 12 different people to take Ben Roethlisberger, who I thought makes a lot of sense. There's some concerns about his throwing elbow, and it's not like Roethlisberger's ever been a guy that's ever in shape throughout his career, and I don't want to knock him, but you never hear stories about, man, Roethlisberger's in the best shape of his life. It's just not his thing. But I do think that Steelers offense all you need is a capable quarterback. They got a lot of different pass catchers that can do some things. I'm interested in their running back field. Even if James Conner gets kind of spaced out with an Anthony McFarland or even a Jalen Samuels of some sort, I just think that team's going to work. And the defense is going to do a lot to stop their opponents and give more opportunities. So Roethlisberger, I think right now, is getting selected like quarterback 16 to 22 range. There's really a lot of differential when you talk about these later quarterbacks. I think he's fantastic. But even like a Matthew Stafford, too, the Lions are probably going to have to pass to be competitive again this year. They still have a lot of weapons, and Stafford's been so consistent throughout most of his career. He's going in that 17, 18, 19 range, too, for quarterbacks, and I think he can easily be a quarterback one in a 12-team league for a lot of different people for a lot of different weeks. So this goes back to saying, wait on the quarterback position if you are in a 4 points per passing touchdown league. But if you are in 6 points per passing touchdown, which happens a lot, and I've seen probably the biggest rise. Everyone does PPR leagues now. That happens all the time, but the quarterbacks and getting their touchdowns bumped up more is something I see all across the fantasy industry. Do go after the Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or, dare I say, Dak Prescott, too, because I think they're going to have a lot more value in those types of formats.
He is Joe Bartel. He is a fantasy football expert for RotoWire. And Joe, I know the RotoWire magazine will be out in just a couple of weeks. Before I let you go, I'll let you go ahead and let the listeners know all the important details, where they can find you and some of the future projects.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at JB Fantasy Sports. I wear a lot of different hats at RotoWire, so especially with all the sports kind of just gearing back into shape now, there's been a lot of emphasis on esports in particular for DFS. So I do write a lot of different Call of Duty articles, League of Legends articles on the site as well, referencing to DFS, and it's been kind of my passion project over the last month or so. So I would definitely, if you are interested in getting to more esports-related DFS, definitely give me a follow on Twitter. However, RotoWire itself, we are definitely gearing up for the NFL season. We have our NFL magazine out to print, so it should be available to subscribers within the next month or so. You can get a free RotoWire subscription by going to RotoWire.com/win, RotoWire.com/win, and sign up for a free subscription. If you feel like our content on the site works out well for you and kind of fits what you're looking for, whether it be for baseball, basketball, which is starting up soon, football, or any other sports, you can then extend a subscription as well. But that is a possibility for you to be able to get one of those NFL magazines, which, again, should be available to subscribers of the site in the next, the next month or so is probably a realistic possibility. And it's always one of my favorite things of the year is to be a part of that magazine. We have a lot of the guys from ESPN, Yahoo, every place that you can imagine. We have them participating in the draft, writing articles themselves. And there's a lot of different projections and helpful tips and tricks if you are getting into fantasy football or want to be competitive in DFS or larger markets. There's something for everybody in that magazine, and it's why it's one of my favorite publications every year.
Joe Bartel, always a pleasure to get you on the show. I definitely appreciate the time. Thank you again.
Yeah, I'm glad we could talk some fantasy football. Thanks for having me on.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Fun to get a fantasy football conversation going. Kind of breaks up the monotony of the regular chit-chat that we've had over the last 2 weeks. Will or won't we have a season here or there? It's fun to talk some fantasy football. Always great to have Joe Bartel on the show. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. Don't forget, you can also listen to Drive Time Sports on demand at CastleCountryRadio.com. I'm Jordan Buscarini. We'll catch you tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.